If you're hanging around five guys that really aren't moving their careers along, you're hanging around the wrong people. I'm just telling you now, right? And the quicker you figure that out, the quicker you become more successful, period.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Building Wealth the Wheeler Way again with Dr. Wheeler Pulliam. Super excited today. I got a good friend. Well, honestly, I'm a little disappointed. The guest I had planned couldn't show up. Warren Buffett couldn't make it. So in his place, I got my good friend here.
That's funny. Really was.
Marcus Maddox, otherwise known as Mark Maddox. Also, didn't you hold a record at Allen High School for something?
I don't know, like the incline press at one point, but this is back in like the late 90s or the early 90s.
Yes, so for you millennials out there, there was light before 2000.
Yeah, I'm old.
That's what it looks like. So you know. That's what it looks like. Mm-hmm. I'm happy. Listen, I'm happy to have Mark here. So Mark is a Dallas-Fort Worth native. For those of you who know me know that I am not. I am from Mississippi, but I do love Dallas, Texas. But what I like about Mark is he is a go-getter, a self-starter. If you want to know about how to start a business, how to run a business, how to market a business, how to be successful at marketing that business, and oh, by the way, if you want to know a little something about crypto, he sprinkles a little crypto, he's the guy to go to, right? So this is Mr. Marcus Maddox. I want to say thanks for being here.
Hey, man, good. I'm not sure if that intro is really all of me. I'm a lot of things. Some of those I am not.
Oh, yeah, he's a husband and a father, too. He's yeah. A little boy, too.
Four-year-old, yeah.
But don't ask him how to change diapers. I don't think he's the guy to go to.
Well, I think we're a little past that at four, though. You know? Yeah, I don't know. He's putting on his shoes well, though, so it's nice.
So listen, for our listeners, why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself, how you wound up in the entrepreneur, what led you to become, I know you went to TCU, right?
Yeah, so started at TCU. After TCU, I graduated. I had met a friend on a golf course. He had car washes. At the time, he owned Classic Car Wash. Well, Classic Car Wash had gone through bankruptcy. They were out of California. He owned about 24. He had sold all of them except for two. He let me lease one out. This is back when I was 24 years old, so right about 2000. That lasted for about 2 years. I kind of found out why he wanted me to lease his wash for him, because he just needed somebody to run it for him, kind of, right? So he's collecting rents, I'm getting cash flows. But anyway, so beyond that, I had been tech focused in college, went to, like you said, TCU. After the car wash, I actually got a job in tech with MCI and network security, right?
That's so MCI WorldCom, right?
Yeah, well, it was WorldCom, but literally like the day after I started, we went back to MCI, and so it was
quick,
great.
Quick aside, remember that? You know, I grew up down the street from?
Oh, yeah, Bernie Evers.
Bernie Evers, baby, yep. He had a daughter a year younger than me, a daughter a year older than me, and I messed up.
He was WorldCom, though.
Yeah, but still, right? Yeah. I could have been. It was
funny because like a lot of the people that had worked there under WorldCom bitched about WorldCom, and we're so happy to go back to MCI. You know, because prior to that it was MCI, then became WorldCom, then back to MCI.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, for the listeners out there, so Bernie Evers was a con man, went to the jail. I think he's dead now. I'm not sure. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think he passed, yeah.
Yeah, but he embezzled a lot of money, like a Ponzi scheme in MCI WorldCom. A lot of people lost a lot of money.
From Mississippi.
But yeah, hometown, yeah.
He was like a head coach there, right?
Yeah. He was a basketball coach from Canada. He came down. Quick story aside is I went to I was in French class, and I went to
You were in French, okay.
Parlez-vous. Yeah, I went over to Paris, and then all of Bernie Evers' friends are there, and they called me to the back and pitched this idea back then, 1998, of MCI WorldCom that was run by Bernie Evers, and wanted me to get my dad into it. Mm. So I go down back home, and my dad's like, "Hey, how is that? How was the Paris trip?" I'm like, "Hey, that's great. You know, for $15,000, you can get in with Bernie Evers." And he listened to the whole thing. And then my dad's old school. You met him, and he's like, he looks at me, he's like, "Bernie Evers." He goes, "The man's a crook." And yeah, I'm like,
did
I'm
he like, offer your dad to invest?
Oh, yeah. So for that, but he says he's a crook, right? And so then you fast forward now, right? So now I'm in Bosnia, 1997, going some business. We had to go dark for a minute. Come back out, I call home on the payphone. For those of you who don't know what a payphone is, you pay for the phone. And I'm calling, and I say, "Hey, everything's okay, Mom, Dad, I'm good." Dad goes, "Hey, you know that Bernie Ebers? You remember Bernie Ebers? I mean, yeah, what about him? Oh, man, he's, you know, just bought a $100,000 gold umbrella, a $32 million home. Yeah, that thing really took off. Yeah, like that helps me. I said, never talk to me about Bernie Ebers again. I hang up the phone.
Right? No.
Well, so then listen, here's the end of it. You fast forward, like 3 years later or whatever, my phone rings again. I see the Bernie Ebers on the front page of the paper handcuff. My phone rings. I open it up. It's my dad. I told you he was a crook. I'm like, we could have got out, you know. Yeah. But anyway, so you were at WorldCom.
Yeah, no, so a quick story from WorldCom. So I was there after we got back to MCI. You know, the story started to come out. So essentially what Bernie came in, so WorldCom was this little fish that swallowed this big fish, MCI, right? So essentially the employees were pissed, right? Because that dude removed all the coffee pots. He was so cheap, coffee, to sell them off to pay down debt. Like, how much could you really gotten? Maybe half a mil. But anyway.
But coming off of that, right? So basically you're like, hey, look, MCI WorldCom, this is not the life for me.
Right.
I need to get out on my own.
Well, not yet. So MCI is there. I'm in network security, right? That's dealing with hackers and viruses at the time. And I see there is nobody doing what we're actually doing in this group, right? But another thing I saw were the nice cars in the parking lot and who drove them. That would be the sales guys, right? So I got to know the sales guys. Well, and there was this position that about 3 years later came around. And it was a network security overlay for sales, right? And so I became that for like 50 reps, right? And so that was when I really started to earn, you know, the six-figure income. So this is now 2004-ish, right? And five and six. And got to know a lot of those guys. A lot of those guys are still, you know, great friends now. And then so when you start earning money, you start placing it. So I got into real estate at that point, 2008.
Right there with real estate. Now, were you like selling houses? You doing commercial?
No, yeah. So I had enough. So I was investing in SFR, single family homes. They just happened to be townhomes, right? Made a lot of mistakes, made some money, but made more mistakes.
Now, were you able to do that again for our listeners? Were you able to keep your main job?
Yes.
And do real estate? That's a great way to make some side money, right? And build a business, right? You're able to do two things at once. Yeah. So I didn't think about that.
It's there's a lot of good side hustles now, but that was mine back then. The six first townhomes that we built, that budget was about 2.5, right? Now, we had seven investors in that. You know, I was just an LP at the time. So, but anyway, so that started to do fairly well. I left. So at about this time, about 2007, 2008, Verizon came in and bought us. You want to talk about a sucky corporate culture? Verizon is it, right?
So I have to say, none really of the opinions quick, by Mark Maddox are backed by
financial advice and only opinions. But here's the thing. So at MCI, we had low bases, high commissions. When Verizon came in with the union employees, right, they came over into our building on Campbell Creek. And what they had was high base, very small commissions. So to get them off their butt, it took a lot. They didn't care. They were getting paid no matter what, right? And so just a total change. At MCI, if we had any margin at all, we'd sell it. Verizon, you had to have 20% or deals off.
So what I'm hearing is just kind of you're just, you know, you're not enjoying it, and you're not seeing, you
exactly.
know, you're seeing the inefficacies of it, and you're like, hey, I need to get out on my own.
Right.
More point, right?
So in here, and I'll get to that now. So, real estate was going well, so I decided to get my real estate license. I started selling commercial. So
how hard was it? Just for our listeners, again, who don't know, how hard was it to get your real estate license?
I don't know.
How much effort did that take or time?
3 months, tops. Yeah. It's not tough. So in Texas, a real estate license, you can basically do, you know, a realtor, you know, selling homes, or you can go into the commercial side, right? Now, the commercial side's more math, but you have to go through that do the test too.
But most people can do it, right?
Yes. Oh, easily. Yes. Okay. Yeah. It's
now you're going out into you're building that up more. Right.
So one of the investors in the townhome, his brother was a broker. I took him on. I got into commercial real estate. So this is kind of a bad time though, right? So it's 2007 going into 2008. And here we go.
Our listeners, right? This is all the subprime loans. Maybe you heard about that.
Where the strippers, the strippers owned about 6 or 7 homes, right?
Right.
Because there was no money down.
Right. So what a subprime loan means is there was really nothing to back it. Like it was very easy to get a loan, and a lot of people to Maddox's point, a lot of people were getting loans that maybe shouldn't have got loans, and that's kind of what caused a little bit of the crisis there in 2008.
Yeah, The Big Short's all about that. If you haven't seen The Big Short, it's Big very, Short. Very good. So.
Correct. So now
it's got a little Brad Pitt in there too.
Boy and girl. Now you're doing commercial real estate. Have you left MCI?
Yes, left there. Commercial real estate did upwards of about, I don't know, $50 million in my short time there.
And this is where you met your wife, right, Katie?
We met.
Realtor love, right?
Yeah. So I got a call just real quick. I got a call. It's like 5 o'clock. I'm literally heading home, but on the way home, there's this warehouse and this girl calls and she sounds, cute, whatever. So I'm like,
she sounds cute.
Yeah, she sounds cute.
How does cute sound?
I don't know. Just, you can kind of, she was very driven too. Right. And so I'm like, yeah, it's on the way home. Oh, she's pretty good looking, great, blah, blah. But the warehouse totally did not suit her needs at all. Told her that. I was upfront. I was, I said, you really need to be looking from this. So apparently I made an impression, although I didn't know it till about 6 months later.
Was that
later.
A good impression or a bad impression?
Well, initially it was bad because, the warehouse didn't work for her, right?
Well, I'm talking about you.
But when we started talking, she's like, oh, this guy knows some things. I'm like, oh, yeah, a little bit. But anyway, so.
It's your modesty, right?
So that was that. Hang on. So if you want to talk about jobs, let me keep going to this jobs thing. And so, and side hustles, right? So at this time now, commercial starting to kind of crumble too, right? The entire world's melting down, right, at this point. So I call Barreto, one of my ex-bosses who worked at MCI, still at Verizon. He's like, man, I got the perfect job. So I go back in, right? So this is now 2009, late 2009. But at the same time, still got that itch, right? So me and some buddies from college out in El Paso, we decided to start a restaurant.
And if you remind me, these are guys you went to college with?
Right. So went to college was with two of them at TCU, because one was my best friend, in fact, and so they brought in a third friend, so it was four of us. We pooled our cash, and we just started a restaurant, a small location out.
What kind of restaurant was it?
Well, it's still around. It's called Wing Daddy Sauce House. You can kind of, wings and, fun, beer, drinks, whatever.
So the four of you guys got together to start a restaurant. I mean, this kind of speaks to what I've always said. It's not exactly, being smart helps, right? But it's not all about...
No, it's about connections too, right. Like your network is your net worth, period, right? So if you're hanging around...
Say that again. What's that?
Your network is your net worth, right? So if you're hanging around five guys that really aren't moving their careers along, you're hanging around the wrong people. I'm just telling you now, right? And the quicker you figure that out, the quicker you become more successful, period, right? Yeah, so that's why these guys, these well-off guys at MCI, now Verizon, who had great jobs. I mean, some of these guys were their commissions were $400,000-$500,000, right? And MCI capped, but you had a committee you could go to uncap, right? And so, but anyway, so I go back to Verizon for like 2 years.
So you got you got Wing Daddy's going, commercial real estate going, and now you're back at work.
So you got two
side hustles and.
Well, at that point, the commercial real estate had really. I would
still
say
it's there.
Peak. Yes. If there's a deal to be had, I would be looking, right? And so went back for about a year and a half. Now 2009, 2010 rolls around, and I just can't do it. So I'm completely out, right?
So let's talk about that. What is it like being out on your own? Right. Versus having a boss. Right. What is that? What is that like?
Well, I can tell you this. I had never been let go of a job, and my time at Verizon, that very short time. So I went to work for a guy that I knew there. He was my boss, and he was in big deal. So I'm not sure exactly his title, but it was VP at the time. But anyway, so he actually had to fire me, right? Let me go in a riff, right? A reduction in force. So if you hear that, reduction in force, riff. And that's a very bad, bad, bad thing. In fact, a lot of tech startups right now are going through that now. But so he let me go, but he immediately found me another job inside the company. I will tell you that day that I went into his office, and I went up there every day. And so we had these talks and just great, great talks, great deal flow. But anyway, he is telling me this, and I'm like your stomach just kind of drops at first. Like, I am really getting let. I've never been let go in my life, right? Yeah. I don't, you know.
It's not a good feeling.
Not a good feeling. Even when you have assets that, you know, that are working for you, it's never a good feeling. And that's really where the bug caught me. Now, at this time, too, the restaurant's taken off. Now we've got two of them. Right.
Yeah. And to your point, and going back, and for those of you don't know, yeah, layoffs are going to be more common. And right now, I think the stats are you're going to change jobs 4 to 5 times in your career, whether you want to or not.
No. Right?
And so for those of you out there that are listening, you know, be prepared for things like that. And then how is that going to affect your, you know, what's your plan B? What's your savings? Right. And it sounds like you kind of have.
Well,
that.
They say now that the average job length right now is just 2 years. 2.5 years, right? And so,
but then going back to it, part of
you need to have a plan B, yes.
And then also part of it is, hey,
or a side hustle.
You're your own boss, right? So mm-hmm. You can't fire yourself, right?
No.
Right? I mean, that's going to be a good feeling, mm-hmm. right? At some mm-hmm. point. I mean, there's certainly a stressor, I'm assuming, right? That mm-hmm. now it's all on me.
Right.
But the other side is, you know, you work hard, you're probably going to be successful.
Yep.
And you're not going to, you know, whereas if you're working for a company, you work hard, you're successful, and yet maybe you still get fired.
Right.
Does that drive you? Does that drive?
Yeah,
you?
I mean, I think it drives everyone. I think if you look back, I mean, every, you know, unless you start at a very, very young age and you're just your own boss, you know, from you know after high school, which is very, very rare, right? You typically go to work for someone and then you see an opportunity out there and you take it, right? And you typically have a mentor that helps, right? And so I would encourage anybody out there, you need to get a job in the industry that you want to work in first, right? Work 6 months, work a year, right? At least understand it.
That's good advice.
Right? Yep. Before you go jumping in with both feet, you know? Yep. Yeah, you got $5,000 or $10,000 or $50,000, whatever it is, you still need the experience, right? You still need that corporate experience. How do I do a budget? What's a balance sheet? What's a cash flow statement? Right? Right, you need to learn that stuff. In fact, I tell my 4-year-old even now, which he's like a little man. It's
you
crazy.
You got your 4-year-old doing balance sheets,
bro. He knows what stocks is. He's like, Dad, that stock's going up. I'm like, yeah, it's green. That's good. It won't be going up for long, but it is now. You know. So
all right. So let's go back then. So you've got, you know, and you've launched more than one restaurant too. I mean, we don't have to go down the whole.
Much just road, been two. Yeah.
But you've launched two restaurants. You were. Big in marketing them, right? Running mm-hmm. them, you kind of know. What's maybe a pitfall for somebody who's starting out or thinking about doing their own thing? What's maybe one thing that they need to think about that you've seen people make that mistake, Tom? I mean, I think the restaurant is, what, got an 88% failure rate, and yet you've launched two successful ones.
Yeah, I mean,
what's maybe a, for somebody out there thinking, what's like a big thing that sticks out to you, like, oh, man, don't do
this? Well, getting back to your network, right, you need to partner with the right people, right? You can't just go, hey, you know what? This guy's my best friend. I'm going to start a business with him. And he knows nothing, right? You know, he drinks a lot, whatever it may be, right? It's just, you know, like you really have to look around, expand your network out. That is really the key to everything, right? Now, do you need some capital? Absolutely. You have to show a proof of concept first, right? A proof of work, right? And
so that's just so for our listeners then. Capital, I mean, you got to have money. You got to have starting up money.
You got to have a little bit.
Proof of concept, like what are you doing, like a business plan, and mm-hmm. what does this look like? Mm-hmm. How do I take this pile of money mm-hmm. and make a business out of it, and what does that plan look
right.
like?
And in that's where the mentor comes in too, because he can open up your network for you. He can help you, right? He might want to invest. Your parents, like right now, there's a lot of people's that parent, your parents are investing in you. One, you're living, you know, if you're living with your parents are investing, right? I mean, they're actually giving you free money right now, right?
That's a good point.
So save that for 6, 7, 10 months, 12 months, year, whatever, and use it, right? And so I we had talked about the whole YOLO Robin Hood thing, you know, last 2 years, but you know, when
so let's talk about that. So it's things like Robin, there's a lot of stuff out there again designed for like easy, quick money, maybe for those who are not, you know, not informed, right? And don't keep it. What are some things to look out for when something like the next, I mean, obviously Robinhood has problems, right?
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
Right. And we don't have to get into that. You guys can Google Robinhood and you can go find that article or whatever. But what are some things that maybe the people out there who are looking for, you know, where to save their money or do it yourself type of stuff, what are some things to be wary of? Like, what would be a red flag for you when you saw the next Robinhood come along? Especially on the internet, right? I mean,
there's always, you know, Nigerian men that want to marry you. let's just start there, right?
Right,
you know,
right.
Stop clicking the links, right? That's a big thing too.
When it's legit, right? A startup, right, or something right. up there.
So if you're like me, my full-time job now is really trading crypto and stocks, even though we're kind of in this massive downturn the last six months. But yeah, I mean, if I'm looking at Robinhood, that was great, right? Because, you know, that really ushered in commission-free trading. That was great, right? And when we went into lockdowns, all these kids, right, let's just say kids for now, you know, they're getting stimulus checks. They ain't got to pay rent, right? Where am I going to put my cash in? And the easiest, to Robinhood's credit, it's very easy to use, right? Now, I wouldn't trade on it. I might do options, which is what I do on it, right? But that's about it, right? There's a lot of other ones out there.
So for people who are not maybe in the know, right, where would you start? Where would you start to learn about what to do with your monies, maybe? Where did you start saving your money when you first came up?
When I started saving it, I don't know if I really saved. I had a cushion. I think when you're young, you need a cushion, but I think you need to start investing young, right?
Okay.
I mean, as you know, like you know, what's the – there was a bartender story I read like a year ago, and it was great. So she got out of high school, did not go to college. She got a managerial job at like a warehouse, right? Mm. So what she did was 2 days a week, she worked as a bartender, and everything that she made there, and I think it was like $200 a night, right? So that's $400 a week, right? Not bad. She saved that for 10 years, and she let it sit there for 40. When she came out at like 55, she had like $6 million. That's the power of compounding
interest. Investing, exactly, yeah. Right.
That's it.
Exactly.
Now, you got to have the discipline not to touch it, though, because there's going to be some ups and downs. We are down right now, right? So you cannot dig into that, right? You got to just put it aside and let it go, right? So,
in our final time here, I kind of want you touched on a little bit of crypto. And for those of you who don't know cryptocurrency, if you haven't heard about it, you're probably living under a rock. If you don't know about it, don't feel bad. A lot of people don't understand it. For the longest time, I didn't understand it. I probably understand it more now than I did, but I'm not an expert. I will say that Mark Maddox here has gotten into crypto. I forget, we were on the golf course, right? Back in 2008, 2009-ish. So we're on a golf course, and my man here, you know, shanks his drive, of course. Starts walking off, right? And then he starts talking about Bitcoin. And I keep hearing, you know, I was deaf before the hearing aids. I kept thinking he's saying Bitcoin. And so he's telling us all about, you guys need to get into Bitcoin. Bitcoin's where it's at. It's going to be the next big thing. And I kept thinking Bitcoin. So I'm thinking like, my kid's walking around with this Bitcoin. And I'm like, what do you do with that? I don't understand. And off we go to play golf. And then over the years, he kept saying, and of course, now it's ballooned up.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll say that Maddox has been in it since the start, and you've been in the ups and downs. So when it comes to crypto, right, what would you say would be the first place someone who didn't know anything about crypto, where would they go to learn more about it?
Well, I mean, I would – do some searches, some
just a basic Google search.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're going to come up with Wikipedia, but I think the key is start small. Take about $200, $300, $500, right? And it sucks that I'm even saying this, but go to Coinbase, buy some, right? Understand that there's going to be ups and downs. Look at all the things you can do with it. You know, there's Bitcoin, there's Ethereum. I'd stay with the blue chip. The blue chip layer ones right now is what it's called.
And again, for our listeners, that means kind of the main ones, yes. Like a Bitcoin or your Ethereum. Or
Bitcoin,
like
Ethereum, Poly, AVAX.
Some that have been around for
yes.
a while.
Yeah.
Do they necessarily need to know about crypto?
Yeah. So what you do know about crypto and what's different from stocks is, right, is that crypto tends to kind of grind down and then FOMO up, right? Where stocks
grind. FOMO. What does FOMO mean?
That's fear of missing out, okay. Right? And so the price in crypto drives the narrative, right? So the higher it goes, the more people jump on board, right? Really, the wrong way to look at it, but that's just how it works, right? Right. Where in stocks is stocks grind up and then crash down. Right, completely different, right? But you know, depending on the stocks too, right? They're both risk assets, right?
So again, so just to jump in a little bit, so a stock there's like an underlying. I think people understand if you don't own a stock, it's basically a part ownership of a company. And let's say take Walmart or McDonald's, and you can see that. You can see one person can walk in and see what a Walmart does or see what a McDonald's does. And there's a thing called they make money, right? As that company, McDonald's. Or, you know, more cheeseburgers they sell, the more money they make. The more
correct.
You know, stuff that Walmart sells, the more money they make. Thus, therefore, the stock ideally kind of goes up, just in simplistic
yes,
terms.
Yes, and...
But crypto is a different animal.
Right. So
what is... Just tell the audience, what is crypto?
Well, in stocks, really quick, you've got buybacks, dividends, you've got cash flow actually...
Yeah, lots of stuff.
Coming in. Crypto does not have that,
but
right?
But what is crypto?
There are a few. So...
Define crypto.
Crypto is DLT, right? Digital Ledger Tech... Technologies, right? If we're just talking about Bitcoin, Bitcoin's like a non-sovereign, hard-capped, decentralized store of value, right? That's what it is.
So
right?
Basically, we're talking about electronic money, but maybe it's not.
We're talking
money.
About digital money that you can move around, right? And why there's a big thing about, so there's something called CBDCs, right? And that's central bank digital currencies, right? And what that is that you right now, they're like there's something called stable coins, right? And that's what CBDCs will be. So you've got a one for one, right? So for every dollar, there's one USDC or one USDT, right? And if, you know, so you can always redeem that and it is pegged to the dollar. That's very, very key, right? Especially now. It's kind of if not the most important thing in crypto right now, because I could be trading Bitcoin and make $500, right? But I don't want to cash that out because guess what? That would be taxed, right? So I want to stay and I want to reinvest. So I would go to a stable coin, right? That's one for one to the dollar. So the profits I would take to a stable coin and let it sit there until the next trading opportunity.
But again, going back to it, so cryptocurrency is different than cash. How?
Well, it's digital cash is what it is, right? Like we could get into like we could really go down
to get down into the weeds, but just for the
rabbit hole here is like
we go, hey, I've heard
like
of
what
crypto.
Is the wait what is the dollar, right? So the dollar is not backed by anything. Bitcoin's not really backed by anything, you know. So
would you say that Bitcoin or whatever cryptocurrency has value because a group of people deem that it has value, right?
Correct.
It just happens to be a big group of people, and it's getting bigger,
right?
Right. I mean, people for a dollar go, "What do you mean dollar not backed by anything?" I get that, but you know, we can physically see a dollar bill, and I can go to the store and hand a dollar bill, and then the idea behind cryptocurrency is we no longer need this physical dollar bill, and then you can move it and not get back.
Right. Involved. I
is
think
that the idea.
Yes,
behind
I think dollars? We're already doing that with your PayPal's, your Venmo's, your Cash App. Look, the government wants you to go to this, right? They don't want you to actually spend, you know, cash, right? In hand cash, right? So last year, you know, 'cause this is just a false narrative that's out there about crypto, and that is that, you know, $1 billion were scammed from people in crypto, right? Mm-hmm. Well, $30 billion were scammed from people just in cash.
That's a good point. Yeah, there's a lot of misinformation. So the point is, there's a lot of misinformation.
A lot of scams going around,
and it's hard to get the real information. So where should people go? I mean, is it mentors or find somebody like you that kind of knows about it, or where do you go?
That, or you know, look, crypto is decentralized. There is no one person to go to. Right.
Just to find out about it.
Right, though. Right, right. Yeah, but there's no like Steve Jobs. There's nobody, there's no CEO of crypto or whatever crypto that you own, right? You know, there are developers that tend to help those ecosystems out. And there are some lead people, right? But there's no like, I can't like once it's out there, it really can't be controlled, right? I mean, there are certain things they can pull back. Yes, but it's digital. It's digital, and I hate to say dollars, because one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin. So when you start thinking in those terms versus $1 equals $1, you can wrap your head around that, right? Well, one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin. It's the same thing. It's just
you bring up a good point.
The dollar value out, yeah, right, now you point, can kind of right? get it.
So what is the danger of people who are novice into crypto saying, hey, I saw Matt Damon on TV, let me just throw $200 at this, because maybe I don't understand it. I don't understand crypto, but I understand 200 going to 2000 because that's what I think is going to happen.
Right. What's the danger in that? Yeah. That's not so. You need to really. So for me, I'll just tell you really quick. You know, I probably did 500 hours of self study to really get into at the time Bitcoin. So I knew about Bitcoin in 2012. Started trading it in 2014, 2015. But prior to that, you know what the number one thing is? Go read the Bitcoin white paper. You'll get it, right? So for years,
the Bitcoin white paper, you can Google that and it'll come up.
Yeah. It's about 30 pages long. So for years, these very, very smart guys in Silicon Valley were trying to figure out how could they make this e-cash, right? But there was one problem. It was called the double spend problem. Crypto solved that, right? Bitcoin solved for the double spend. So Google that. You'll go down a big rabbit hole, but it's a very interesting one and one you'll want to know about, right? And
so would you recommend then that people just not randomly, I mean, because, and let's be honest, right? It's crypto today, and whether you agree with it or not, but that's kind of a fad to an extent as far as thought. And, you know, maybe it was something else in the 80s, and there'll be another one.
I don't know, man. I think
I'm not saying, I'm just saying, I'm not, I'm,
it's
I'm
a
not
$2 trillion to say asset class.
It's a fad. I'm saying it's a fad to invest in right now. Meaning what I'm saying is something that people may not know about. They're not really fully understanding where they're putting their money, but they're putting it there.
Correct.
Right.
That is
dangerous to do.
It is. So if you don't like volatility, then yeah, crypto is not the place to be.
And let me ask this. Would you recommend putting all of your money into crypto?
No.
Right.
No. Okay. No. Right now, most institutions, even like very wealthy men that I know, the most is 5%, right? Most are around 2%, you know, if they're really heavy. But that's because regulations, there are no really set regulations yet, right? But again, you can't ignore a $2 trillion asset.
Right, and again,
class.
I'm not talking about just specific. I mean, crypto is just an example, right? So I'm not endorsing or unendorsing crypto. I'm just saying as an example, let's just call it widget, whatever investment. In this case, crypto. The danger you run into, especially younger people, is thinking that it's always going to go up. If I put in 200 and it's automatically going to go 1,000, it's just not the reality.
No stock, nothing goes up in a straight line, right?
But it's like Vegas, right? When you're winning, you want to put more money down thinking you're not going to lose.
Right. That's FOMO right there. Right.
Fear of missing out.
Yeah.
Fear of missing out.
Yeah. So, okay. But.
So, what would you say here when we're kind of wrapping up on crypto? What would be a key takeaway you would tell people looking to see if it makes sense for them or not?
Yeah, I would. So there are crypto future ETFs out there. You can get into those. There's one called GBTC, but there is a Canadian spot Bitcoin ETF. That would be a good way. That's a very safe play, right?
You're saying kind of dip your toe into one, put a little bit, you know, $100, $50, whatever that is.
Yeah,
but that you can afford to walk away from and call it Vegas money. That if I lose it, I don't care.
But
the best way you learn is by kind of being involved.
Right. You've got to get involved. You got to do your research, right? That's a big term in crypto, like do your own research, DYOR. And so,
but you're not putting your house money in it.
No, you want to dip your toe. You want your $200-$500, right? Just to see what it does, right?
And you're not putting your 401k in it, right? No. I mean, I'm assuming. I know. So that's a very popular thing now, right? I get clients call me all the time. So now that, you know, some companies are out there offering in the 401k plan,
it's coming.
You hear about, hey, well, do I need to put everything in crypto?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this podcast is not meant to make regular. Oh, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, don't put everything. Well, first of all, you got to diversify. Like right. Nobody put, like, look, we're investing for the long term here. And to put, now a lot of billionaires are made when you just, you know, come down that single asset, but you know that inside and out.
But it's kind of like being an NBA player, right? Not everybody who plays basketball is not going to wind up being an NBA player. So it's very small.
Right. So diversify, right? Right. Yeah. So it should be a very small percentage of your portfolio right now until we have some regulations, and then or until you actually understand it, right? Now, so please understand, guys. I've been in since 2012. I've had 80% downs 4 times. I've had 290% downs. Right. And that's just in Bitcoin. Right. I think I've had like 8 or 9 40% downs. Right. And, you know, now, but
and you're not eating beanie weenies when it's down. That's money you can afford. Right.
Correct.
You're not happy about it, but you're not, your lifestyle didn't change when it goes up and down.
No. You, I mean, that's the lifestyle that you live. Yeah. Right.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah. And then, you know, switching gears here as we're wrapping up, you know, being an entrepreneur that you are, been very successful. The market is no lie. The market's crazy down right now. People freaking out. Inflation, I think, is something like 8.5%. What are your thoughts there? What should people be doing now?
I think you're so far, not to be Mr. Macro here, but I think that, you know, right now.
Macromatics, I like that. Yeah. Let's do that.
No, that is not me. So you're so far down. Like if you're still in stocks and a lot of you probably are, there might be another leg down 10% tops, right? So you might as well just stick it out now, right?
But what about those people out there doing the side hustle? Maybe they're younger, maybe they're not. Maybe they got their W-2 job, they're going to work, and they're doing something on the side. What does this inflation do to them? You've been through the ups and downs trying to get your side hustle.
Well, I would say this. A lot of wealth can be made right now. So if you've got some cash, I'd really start to, you know, I hate to dollar cost average in a downtrend, but this is where, because, you know, 20 years from now, this was the bottom, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can make a lot of money putting in, and again, don't just drop in at one time, right?
We talk about over a month, you know, maybe $300 or $400 a month putting back into the investment of choice, maybe the S&P 500 or whatever that is.
But I will say this again, not to be Mr. Macro, but I do believe, so I think we're already in a mild recession. I think it's worse. I think we've probably got 18 months at least, maybe 24 months here. Cash is king. I think it gets worse. I don't think it gets much worse. You know, the QE has completely screwed up the entire monetary system. This is something that we should have done in 2021, and here we are, right, with the QT.
But let's talk about stuff that people, you know, that my viewers can't be right. You know, they can't really affect that. But sitting at home, you know, what can they do? And dollar cost averaging is very good. It's very disciplined to buy when things are down. But in essence, you're talking about buying when things are sell, which is it's counterintuitive, but that's what you're supposed to do, especially in the market.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from markets and just in lifestyle in general, as an entrepreneur, what do you suggest?
Oh, I think you've got to cut back. A side gig is really, really good right now, right? A lot of people in times like this that were working for themselves do go back into the workforce, right? And just kind of wait it out, right? But a lot of people working for themselves right now will get a side hustle, right? Or they're working from home and they might be working two jobs, you know? And the employers not really know you're working two jobs. I've got a friend like that right now. So
I had one friend who had two jobs, but he wasn't really working one. He was at one company and they fired him or let him go, but they didn't tell payroll. So he's in essence getting paid for a year. He's getting paid $100,000 from another job when he's running over had another job. And then he finally got, you know, he felt guilty about it and finally called him and told him.
And yeah, that is corporate America to a T right there.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, man, I appreciate you showing up. Hopefully people took, you know, we talked about crypto. Again, if it's, you know, learn what you're doing, kind of get into it. If you, you know, if you want to get into it, be very minimalistic about it and only put in what you can afford to lose.
Well, that, understand, and know what you own.
Know what you own. Understand it's volatile. You know, getting a side hustle, it's about your network, right? Mm-hmm. Network, you know, get a mentor out there to kind of show you the ropes. If you're able to get a job and you're into something that you like or think you're going to like, try and do that first. That's the best way.
Mm-hmm.
And then perseverance, right? You know, even when it's down, you gotta keep plugging away.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, especially when it's down, this is when you want to invest the most, right? And so, I mean, this is what makes generational wealth. And so, so you have to look at these as these bear markets as an opportunity to get into the market, right? You're gonna end like. Today, I think we're at the lows of the last, literally since the 20 March 20,
right.
20,
yeah,
twenty. So
so where can people find you?
Okay, so I do a lot of TikTok lives. Look at stocktrade.tips. That's not a website, so you can type that in on TikTok. You can type it in on YouTube. You can on Twitter. Not a big following there yet. I just hadn't tried. It's at Trading Heavy, and you can find me there. I've got a lot of different opinions, mostly on crypto, but I do trade risk assets across the board, and that includes equities and stocks, of course, and that's what I do right now. So now I am invested in some side hustles, if you would, some private companies, right? Some
dark secret, non-governmental stuff.
A little bit, you know. I am a fan, let's just say this, of ghost kitchens. Oh, so, yeah. Yes.
All right. That'll be the next podcast on building wealth with Wheeler with a ghost kitchen. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine you in the kitchen. But thank you, Max. Thank you guys for tuning in.
Thanks, man.
Be sure to check us up next time for our next episode of Building Wealth with Wheeler and give you some more ideas about how you can retire successfully and make sure, again, that you don't die broke. Thanks.